Business Meetings, written by Lomona Aran, read by Smirking Cat. This is a Harry Potter fanfic with the pairing Draco Malfoy Harry Potter, and the rating is mature. It was recorded for the Draco Tops Harry Fest 2017, hosted over at LiveJournal. Summary: Draco leads a powerful group of vampires. Harry is the ministry-appointed negotiator. Q, a series of once-monthly meetings where Harry and Draco argue about the various virtues of attacking the ministry versus holding back from doing so, and, eventually, other things. Author's notes: this is a fic with very short chapters and a deliberately constrained setting throughout most of it. Reader's notes: I want to thank Lomona Aran for permission to record Potfic, and I hope I can do this amazing story justice, and I hope you will enjoy. Meetings. Chapter 1. The Ministry's Compromise.
I'm here under protest.
Not the best beginning to a meeting such as this, Draco pointed out mildly and leaned back on his chair, arranging his arms and lifting his head so that he would expose his heart and throat. Hopefully, Potter would have to prove he was still a hero, and that would rid Draco of both a long-standing rival and a ministry impediment at the same time. Potter only shook his head and leaned back in the chair that Draco had provided for him, made of cold black stone like his, but smaller.
"Of course you would have a throne," he said. "Like Voldemort in a lot of things, aren't you?"
Draco felt himself shudder with the name, and hated himself for doing so, and hated Potter for seeing. He let his lips draw back from his fangs. Potter smiled back and then looked around the room of his mansion Draco had chosen for them to meet in. Draco had no trouble seeing it with a stranger's eyes, since he had chosen the decor of his rooms mostly to impress, not for comfort. What need had a vampire for comfort, except the kind that came through the mouth? The marble walls, the gold-encrusted furniture, the dim torches sputtering in platinum scones on the walls, the tiles covering the floors that winked with rubies and diamonds on the edges, had done a good job so far of intimidating the werewolves and other vampires who had come to negotiate with him and his flock, and with the sole ministry representative who had ventured this far. Of course, he realized a moment later, it did him little good when what he should be seeing with were Potter's eyes.
"Lots of stone," Potter commented, letting his eyes roam the walls and then drop down to the tiles. "And gemstone. Lots of big, hard things." He paused thoughtfully.
"Compensating for something, Malfoy." Draco forced himself to hold still and not react, and to open his nostrils further. Potter had keen senses for a human,
all those trained by the aurors did, but it was nothing to Draco's ability to smell emotions and hear heartbeats. But as he had not seen with Potter's eyes until he remembered who he was talking to, he had not felt with Potter's emotions. He heard a heartbeat slightly slower than human normal. He smelled dust and fire, boredom and smoldering anger. No fear. "If you are here under protest," Draco said and pitched his voice to echo from the walls. "You could leave again. Not hard, is it?" Potter flashed him a smile. "The one thing in this room that isn't," he agreed and slung one leg over the other. But no, seriously, I'm here for the exact reason I told you. The Ministry would like nothing better than to kill you. A large flock of vampires with a powerful leader who retrained his wizard abilities post-transformation? Bad news. I convinced them not to move too hastily, and then they gave me the task of glorified babysitter. He sighed. "So I come here once a month and tell you off for being a bad, bad vampire. And you snarl at me and I go back to the Ministry and tell them that in my perception, you are no immediate threat. Then everybody goes to bed happy." He paused. "Or to their coffins happy, I suppose." "No immediate threat," Draco said and tilted his head forwards again. "I think that is the most insulting thing you've said so far." "Well, if you need to be convinced." Potter leaned back and Draco watched the smooth line of his neck tilt, watched the pulse come into view, looked at the fragile line of collarbone that seemed to say Potter had gained no weight since Hogwarts, despite developing muscles. "Come on, then." Draco was flashing across the room while Potter's mouth still moved on the words. He leaped gracefully so as to land draping Potter's body with his own, and with his mouth positioned firmly against Potter's neck, and found Potter's wand against his ribs, at the angle that would strike a spell between them and explode the rotten mess that comprised his heart. Draco paused and then pulled his head back, turning it slightly so his fangs scraped the air above Potter's skin. "No human moves that fast," he whispered. "What are you?" Potter gave him a tired smile. "Not a werewolf or a vampire, if that's what you're thinking. You would have smelled that on me when I came in, wouldn't you?" He paused, and Draco realized he was giving Draco time to nod. Reluctant though he was to give Potter credence for any of his ridiculous theories, he did. He couldn't allow Potter to doubt his abilities. "I'm just a fast human with a lot of training and a lot of experience anticipating what dark wizards are going to do." Potter shifted and nudged Draco in the thigh with one knee. Draco flowed off him, never taking his eyes from Potter's face. "And you don't need the trouble you would steer by killing me. The Ministry can afford to lose a lot of negotiators, and there are some people there who think they could stand to lose me. But the wizarding world would demand they hunt you down." "It might be worth it," Draco whispered, swaying nearer again so he could see what Potter would do. A sharp little flame sprang up on the edge of Potter's wand in response. Draco fell back with a hiss. He knew that no ordinary fire would have that particular glare, that particular glow. This was sunlight. Potter dismissed the sun flame and cocked his head.
Really?
No, Draco had to concede. When he became Lord of the Flock, he had put aside the temptation to follow old grudges, because the most important thing was the survival of all those minds he could feel pushing at his own. The minds that would be like starving stray dogs if he let go of them. He had formed the Flock in the first place to stop the Ministry from destroying vampires, from destroying him. He was stronger with more of his kind around him, and he wouldn't risk dissipating the strength simply to kill one of the Ministry's strengths. Besides, Potter was preferable to someone who stank of fear. If he must let a human visit his den and walk away each time. Very well, he said aloud. I will expect you next month. On the 3rd? Works for me. Potter stood and nodded to him. Good luck to you, Malfoy. You're more civilized than I expected. Living up to and past your standards is not difficult. That won a faint smile from Potter. Probably true, he said, and turned and left the dark room. Draco closed his eyes, focused his ears, and listened to him threading his way back through the rooms to the outside world, obviously remembering his path, despite the dim lightning and negotiating them only once. Yes, if Draco must speak with someone each month, someone as powerful, intelligent, and arrogant as himself was preferable. Two. Strong in the darkness. Harry sighed as he walked into the Malfoy's throne room and saw him sitting upright like some Egyptian decoration. He didn't really want to be here, not when he had already put in a long day of tracking, fighting, recovering from a few of his injuries in hospital, and filling paperwork related to the case. But it was the 3rd of the month, and the Ministry flunky assigned to convey messages had been apologetic with wet eyes. Harry knew what that meant. The Ministry was capable of deciding that they had been too tolerant and killing Malfoy's Flock despite their promises, because one of the privileges the Ministry reserved to itself was the ability to change its mind. And you're thinking about it like it's a particularly bitchy person, instead of the organization you work for. Harry fought with a shake of his head and flopped gracelessly into his chair. A moment later he winced. He'd banged his hip against the side of the seat, and that made the wounds low on his back along his spine flare up. The healers would take him apart if he had torn them open again. But when Harry paused and concentrated on his skin, he couldn't feel the trickle of blood. And it was a stony expression Malfoy faced him with, not the hunting dog's eagerness that Harry knew blood gave to vampires. He nodded once when he looked at Harry and then went back to staring above his head. "Here I am," Harry said. If he leaned to his side and crossed his legs, the wounds hurt less. He still wished he could cast a cushioning charm, but he would only draw his wand here if he meant it. "Was there anything you wanted to say to me?"
"What was your opinion of the new anti-vampire legislation passed in the Wizengamot yesterday?"
Malfoy had mastered letting his voice boom out from different directions without moving his lips. That must be the height of ambition with him, Harry thought. After all, he did so wish to resemble a marble statue, and now he doesn't have to look like he's speaking either.
"Is that what your spies told you?"
Harry laughed and leaned even a little more to the side. Malfoy's eyes fixed on him, but nothing else moved. Well, it wasn't like a vampire needed to breathe, was it?
"It's not. It doesn't tighten the registry restriction or target flocks like yours that don't live right next to humans. It does say that the parents of any child caught in a relationship with a vampire will be fined and sent to Azkaban if it can be proven that they sold their child to the vampire."
Malfoy showed his fangs then. Harry shook his head as he looked at them, slender and deadly, bright ivory needles, but still not as wide as Malfoy would need them to be to complete the marble statue impersonation. Then again, neither was his hair.
"It restricts the willing choices of young bloods," Malfoy said, "both vampire and wizard."
Harry snorted. "It seems pretty bloody simple to me. Don't let your flock buy children and report any parents who try to sell them to you to the ministry.
It is the first wall imposed on our will," or the ceiling appeared to say with his voice. "There will come more. We will run into them and our people will mourn and lament. Maybe you should have been an actor instead of a vampire," Harry said and leaned back in his chair, conjuring a stool with his wand in his pocket. Malfoy whipped one arm around in front of his body as the stool appeared, then subsided. Harry chuckled and put his feet on it. It was good to see that Malfoy's statue impersonation was even less successful than he thought it was. "Then you can make your ridiculous declamations and have people stand a chance of believing them."
Malfoy leaned forwards now, apparently having decided that as long as he had broken his stillness, he might as well break it in style.
"Did you know," he murmured, "that it would cost me less than 2 seconds to snap your neck, Potter?"
Harry grinned at him. "Why so long?" Malfoy went still again, then resumed his posture with his arms on the arms of the throne.
"I have counted," he said. "It is always better to understand your own abilities than to overestimate them, especially when you have enemies who would be happy to see you do so."
"That's true," Harry said, "and the first good sense I've heard you speak." He yawned and didn't miss the way Malfoy tensed.
"I ought to let you know," he murmured, closing his eyes and tilting his head back so that his throat deliberately showed, "that I can burn a vampire's eyes out in less than 2 seconds.
And you have often had occasion to test this?" Harry opened one eye. Well, that was the first time he had heard that particular throbbing snarl in his voice, as though Malfoy could care about vampires other than himself. Harry wondered idly if he knew that it made him more attractive than all the posing and imitation of stone in the world could possibly have done. Not that he would care about being attractive to a human, not when he thinks mostly about snapping their necks and drinking their blood.
I killed two vampires who came after me, Harry answered, and one that was threatening someone else.
How do you know it was threatening someone else?
Malfoy coiled on the edge of the throne. Harry blinked as he watched him, more in fascination than anything else. He moved like a cross between a snake and a cat.
It could have been a consensual blood contract, like the kind that the ministry professes to value and refuses to honor.
Backing up to the edge of the cliff and threatening to throw her off if she didn't get the blood she wanted from her was pretty convincing, Harry said.
Malfoy tilted his head to the side, reminding Harry right now of a curious dog. He decided Malfoy would hate the comparison, which meant he needed to use it someday.
You still could have misunderstood something. You know nothing of the niceties of vampire behavior.
No. Nothing beyond what I learned in my aura courses, Harry admitted, which were mostly what you looked like and how to defeat you.
Malfoy's lips slid back from his fangs again.
On the other hand, Harry added, when the choice is possibly watch a murder happen myself because the vampire facing me might not understand I'm a sodding aura and it needs to put the victim down, or get the vampire a bit upset, then I know which one I'm going to choose.
Malfoy let his eyelids fall over his eyes as he peered at Harry. Harry cocked his head back in response.
Hey, if Malfoy can do it, so can I.
What? He asked.
You don't consider killing a vampire murder, Malfoy said. But you intervene to protect my flock from the ministry.
Harry sighed. Not this again, he complained.
I've already dealt with enough people today who think that any time we have to kill a dark wizard is murder. We'd already warned him, and I already warned this vampire. I don't know what else I'm supposed to do. If the choice comes down to the killer and the innocent victim, I hate killing. I don't like it, but I'll do it. If I didn't, I think you would despise me more for it.
Then you treat vampires like humans, Malfoy said.
Harry shrugged. Not exactly. That would be stupid when you're stronger and faster than we are. But morally alike? Yeah.
Malfoy turned his head to the side, and a weird noise emerged from his throat. The only sound Harry could compare it to was a burbling purr. He blinked, shook his head, and stood. He knew he had spent too much time around vampires when he started thinking of Malfoy as a big, cuddly kitty cat, which meant it was time to leave his presence.
So, same day next month?
It is rare to find an aura who will treat us like that, Malfoy said, still staring at him.
I know, Harry said shortly. But I've never done things just because other people will approve of me for them. You know that.
Malfoy closed his eyes. But we could still use an aura who would understand the social niceties of vampire interactions,
and when they might be interrupting a consensual contract. Harry rolled his eyes. When you find one, let me know. I'd like to be relieved of this duty. He turned to leave the room, making sure not to limp. God alone knew what Malfoy would do if he saw that. Potter. As far as Harry knew, the enchantments that vampires could use on their victims by looking them in their eyes or singing their names to them didn't work on him, the same way the Imperius curse didn't. But he paused and looked back when he heard that word in that voice, and he didn't have to. Malfoy stared at him, eyes sparkling like hermetite. Until we find an aura who understands everything important about us, Malfoy said precisely, one like you will do very well. Harry knew that statement didn't deserve a grin and a wave of his hand, as though Malfoy was an ordinary friend he was saying goodbye to. But he gave it anyway, because he wanted to. See you next month, he murmured, but at least he said that to himself and not Malfoy. A chuckle followed him anyway, riding the edge of hearing, peculiarly suited to the dim magnificence Harry glimpsed on the edge of the firelight. After the kill. Draco could feel the rasp of dried blood beneath his fingernails as he sat down on the throne. He lifted his hand to his mouth and darted out his tongue to reach the flakes just as Potter came into the room. For one moment, Draco felt the impulse to freeze, but he put it aside and lowered his hand to stare at Potter instead. Potter nodded at him and strode to his own chair, not smelling surprised or impressed or anything else that Draco would have expected him to. His eyes were narrow and glowing, his stride careless and sure. He flung himself into the chair with enough force to make it shake. "You are not happy to be here this time," Draco concluded, letting his tongue extend towards his nails again. Potter didn't seem to notice the remarkable length of a vampire's tongue. Indeed, when Draco glanced at him, he saw that he had his head leaning back, his busy hand rubbing at the nape of his neck. Draco saw the pulse and had to look away. "No, you can fucking say that, Malfoy." He didn't bark when he laughed, he didn't roar, but the intriguing sound he made was somewhere in between the two. "Tell me," Draco said, and finished cleaning the blood. Dried, it had a dusty taste, more like rust than iron, but his body still opened to welcome it, and he could feel his veins twitching in wonder and appreciation. "What happened?" "The Ministry made another threat against your flock directly to me." Potter made a sharp, disgusted noise and rocked his chair forwards until it grated and slid on the stone. As if my agreeing to become your negotiator isn't enough? What else do they want from me? Perhaps, Draco said, because he knew such tactics worked with Gryffindors. You could consider what the threat would mean to us instead of you. There was a pause, and Potter's throat worked. Then, to Draco's secret flaring of his nostrils, he dropped his arm and nodded. There's that, you're right. He focused on Draco then and frowned. Someone tried to strangle you? Potter's sight was keener than Draco had thought. If he could make out the fading silver-white bruises on the skin of Draco's throat from that distance, he would remember that if he ever needed to kill him. Tried to force me to my knees and drink from me. He corrected Potter. That would be what a vampire tries to do when he's tired of being ruled and thinks he can claim his freedom. Potter's throat worked again. Then he said, I take it he's dead. Will you call killing a vampire murder when I do it then? Draco turned his hand and licked at an imaginary patch of blood on the heel of his palm, purely for Potter's benefit. An interesting definition of terms you have. I'm thinking about how that death might affect the Ministry's perception of your flock's strength. Draco paused. Then he showed his fangs. Potter, he said, making his voice exquisite, lengthening the sound and adding the death croon that most only heard in the moments immediately before a vampire struck. If you are about to suggest that the Ministry would easily take down my flock because they perceive it as weak thanks to the death of a single member, then you should know your death would be the first. He might not be able to take Potter by himself, but all he had to do was let the straining minds in the back of his own slip the leash. Potter shook his head. His eyes were clear now, and he sat upright. And his scent filled Draco's nostrils with the quiver of excitement that caused him to suppress his twitching. The sight of Potter, so attentive, filled a hunger in Draco, older and deeper than the one for blood. One that made him feel human again. I mean, they might think they can, Potter said, and that you would have to kill someone then. And the Ministry might again start campaigning to simply eliminate the lot of you. Draco lifted his head and showed off the tips of his fangs, this time letting his lips descend over the rest. Potter was not the threat himself. You have no idea how many vampires I command. 65, Potter said. And there was no hesitation, and there was no hemming, and hawing, and pretending, and there was no sensation of legitimacy against the borders of his mind, which together were the negatives that made Draco flash down and into being before Potter's chair, leaning over him, his fangs an inch above the top of Potter's head. Potter looked at him without moving, but there was a scent around him, like a bush fire, smoldering, that told Draco he wouldn't have to. He wondered, because he had to wonder, if he would taste Potter's magic if he drank his blood. You will tell me, Draco whispered. You will tell me how you know that. Sorry, but your way to enchant your victims doesn't work on me, Potter said, still staring at him with bright eyes. Draco kept his mouth still, otherwise he probably would try to bite, for the pleasure of seeing those eyes glaze. Potter's mouth fall open, his hands uncurl, and his body slump back along the throne.
And I'm a predator just like you,
Potter continued quietly. Only one who seeks to protect and not to hurt. I value both human and vampire lives, as long as they aren't doing something that makes me aware they don't value others.
Step back, Malfoy. I am only the messenger, not the enemy.
The enemy has a spy in your ranks,
yes.
Surely you have some inside the ministry.
Draco stepped back, moving his body but not his eyes.
I could attack tonight, he said. Not you. I would not kill you. But some of those who threaten me, I would.
I appreciate it for the gracious gesture it is,
Potter murmured. Sparing someone who might be a danger is quite a gift for a vampire.
I would not kill you because I want the knowledge, Draco said.
Give me the name of the ministry spy.
Potter nodded.
In return, I want the name of the vampire you killed.
Draco paused, but he doubted in the end that it mattered.
The ministry spy had probably already reported the incident where Draco had killed his challenger, along with the exact number of his kind in the flock. His throat grew hot, but he fought back the urge to lengthen his fangs and inclined his head.
Duncan, he said.
Duncan, Potter said. It took Draco a moment to realize that Potter had not simply echoed him to fix the name in his memory. He took a step back and studied Potter in profile, committing the lines of nose and chin and lips to memory. Polyjuice could give a human the form of another face, but not the exact small gestures and expressions of the kind that the vampire could notice.
You would swear to it?
Potter laid his hand on his wand, but he had gone so slowly that Draco knew it was not meant as a threat.
I swear on my magic. Duncan was the ministry spy, as well as the one who challenged you.
I reckon. He thought he'd got away with the spying act for so long. He might as well take control of the flock, too.
Draco nodded.
He had noticed the changes in Duncan's scent months ago, as well as the changes in the tremors of Duncan's leash in his mind. But he had thought it merely indicated that his lieutenant was preparing to challenge him. He had exiled himself from the human world after his death. It occurred to him, as it had done after each of Potter's visits, that he needed to pay more attention to the matters outside his flock. Not everything they did related solely to their own affairs, any more than the rising of the sun and moon was without effect on the world below.
You won't need to fear much retribution from the ministry for now.
I don't think, Potter said standing.
They won't dare attack without more exact information than they received from him.
Because he bargained with them to release it slowly, of course. And they can't accuse of you murdering a ministry ally when they would have to explain how they knew. If I hear anything else, I'll let you know.
Strange, Draco said.
Potter, about to leave the room, paused but didn't glance back.
What?
That you speak about the ministry as if you were not part of them.
Potter turned then and showed his teeth.
Draco flashed his fangs back immediately, but of course Potter didn't understand that as a vampire dominance gesture and therefore didn't grasp the conflict it almost precipitated. "Some of them don't like me for my fame," Potter said. "Some for my stubbornness, some for my blood, some for my refusal to be manipulated. All of those reasons, all of those are reasons that I would find to value you," Draco murmured, "especially your blood. Oh yes." He could imagine the way it would leap to life in his mouth, like a supernova. Potter laughed this time and shook his head. "Well, you at least remind me there's another kind of blood politics. I'll keep that pun in mind the next time they're discussing me as if they think half-bloods have hearing problems." He raised his hand and turned away, walking through the dark as confidently as always. Draco noticed a last brand of Duncan's blood on his palm and licked it off without taking his eyes from Potter's turned back and steady steps. All the while he was imagining a different taste to the blood on his tongue, and not simply because this patch was dry.